just you and your bearded bros. You had your shiny mouse clicker and your brand new flannel clothes. But then you wake up in the morning with your head on fire. What did you write on your PC? Go and write an emo ditty, but don't come trolling at me. Because it's the Punk News Podcast. We gotta open up our mouth. It's the Punk News Podcast where we always scream and shout. We want the last word tonight because you know we're always right. Because it's the Punk News Podcast. It's the Punk News Podcast tonight. Demo cassette and all the people that you know at Gilman, and the story of your crack OG press kept us so filled in. Yes, but now you just can't remember all the things you typed, and you're not sure that you wanna know. I'll give you one hint, homie, you sure do like the Crow. Because it's the Punk News Podcast, we gotta open up our mouth. It's the Punk News Podcast where we always scream and shout. We want the last word tonight because you know we're always right. It's the Punk News Podcast. It's the Punk News Podcast tonight. Go!
Okay, welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. This is Adam. I've taken over hosting duties as the intro song is playing, mainly because I am woefully uninformed about what we're actually doing this evening, which is bound to make this a really good show, because really ignorance is the fuel that fires the Punk News Podcast engine.
I think the quote, Adam, is ignorance is the fuel that flames hatred, but, you know, whatever.
But no, we're not flaming hatred. We're just, we're just going to be not very insightful. At least I won't. But yeah, I got home and there was a package for me here and it looked like a bunch of records. It was like one of those record shaped boxes. And I opened it up and it wasn't. What it was something I ordered the other day, which is there's this company up here in Canada, which is where I live. It's a country called Records on Walls. And they make these kind of T-shaped plastic frame things that you can stick on the wall with screws. And there's kind of like a lip on the top and a lip on the bottom. And what it's meant to be is that you can take an album and stick it in there and it'll like mount it flush to the wall. But the album can really easily be taken out so you can actually play the thing. Like, because like when I was younger, I had those record frames you could hang up on the wall, but they were always just like a frame. We'd like fuck around with the album to get it in there, and it would get clipped in with these metal clips, and you couldn't take it out, and it would basically just wreck everything. This is great because you can actually like take them in and out like it's a store display. So I'm really excited. I ordered four of them. I'm sitting here with a screwdriver and a level, and I was going to do it. And then my Skype rang, and it was John saying, we're podcasting. So what do I know? Anyways, though, these look really cool. I'm going to mount them as soon as we're off. So I'm going to give these guys a free plug because they seem really neat. It's recordsonwalls.com, and you can find out about that.
Is that why we're running late?
Yeah, well, that and that I didn't know we were actually doing the show because I don't actually pay attention to the internet. This is what people want to hear, you know.
Excellent.
About how the sausage is made and whatnot. So anyways, joining me on tonight's show, apparently, John Gentile in Philadelphia. How you doing, John?
Well, good. You know, it was weird. I got home today, too, and there was like a record-shaped box near my house, and like in my front door. I was like, oh, man, this is awesome. I got some records. I opened it up, and inside there was a bunch of dead small rodents. I don't know what that was about, man.
Well, that's that article, that interview that you posted. I won't even mention it. It's just the hate keeps coming.
Very true. Very true. But, you know, you can always use some. You never know when you're going to need some dead rodents. So
you compress them, right? You can get a lot of dead rodents in a record shipper.
Yeah, man. I mean, there's at least like 25 mice in there, a couple of possums, you know, lots of different kinds. Possums? All types. Opossums.
Is a possum truly a rodent?
Sure, a possum's a rodent. What else is it?
I have no idea. That's why I ask.
That's a good. A possum is a marsupial. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, maybe a possum is a marsupial.
Like a kangaroo. Which doesn't make any sense, I guess. But hey, whatever. This is the Punk News Biology Hour. Okay. Anyways, also joining me, and I don't know where you're from because I haven't said it enough. Mark Little in
Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Thanks a lot. Why is that?
I don't.
Anyway, why is it worse than Canada?
You definitely probably have more predatory insects than Canada.
Definitely have way more insects down here than Canada and probably anywhere else in the United States. We are probably the insect capital of the United States and Adam, North America for that matter.
Adam, do you not have like insects at all where you live? Like, is that not even an issue ever?
No, it's totally an issue. I live in Niagara Falls. If you look at the map, we're below like a whole bunch of like major U.S. cities because like that's where Canada kind of like jacks down into the U.S. So we're actually pretty far south here. It's super warm. There's
Canada always trying to take our land, trying to sneak in around New York. I see.
Yeah. Like just like this like sneak in there between New York and Michigan. You don't even know we're going to do it. It's warm. We have bugs here. There's mosquitoes and black flies and stuff like that. But actually, if you want to know the one thing that has totally ruined this area for me is, and I'm going to blame climate change for this because this was not the case when I was a kid, ticks.
Ah,
we didn't have ticks when I was growing up.
Really?
You could go.
What?
You could go lie in a field and roll around in the long grass and you would not get a tick on you. There'd be grasshoppers and caterpillars and whatever the hell else is out in the field. You would not get ticks. But in the past 4 or 5 years, ticks, like they're because the winters haven't been as cold, so they're not getting killed off by like the harsh cold, I guess. And these things are just like encroaching northward. So now there's like my office is next to a field and there's freaking ticks crawling on the building, looking at me through the window. There was one on the door the other day. It was sitting on the door handle like it was the world's smartest tick, where it was just going to be like, ha-ha, like this is the place where I'm going to live. And it sucks because I like going outside in the woods and stuff like that. And now there's fucking ticks everywhere. So what do I got to do? I got to go further north.
Adam, at like 3 o'clock, you like wake up and you're like, what's that noise coming from the window? You look at the window and there's like a tick tapping at it, looking at it right at you.
Smoking a cigarette or something. I know.
Oh, man. Hanging on the corner with its leather jacket on.
Those are some nasty.
Toothpick in its mouth.
Those are some nasty ass animals. Ticks are nasty things, I'll tell you.
I imagine that Florida is just like a big tick swarm.
Honestly, I've never had to deal with ticks down here. I'm sure we have them, but the cockroaches or as we call them down
that
here,
we don't have
palmetto bugs, because our cockroaches fly.
Do you ever see that episode of the Bug Show that Johnny Rotten did, where he goes in that lady's cockroach house?
What?
John Lydon just did a show on the BBC or something, some British nature show a few years ago. This was in his phase where he's just going to do like every fucking weird thing that he can. So it was sometime between the butter commercial and the Jesus Christ Superstar thing and one of the Sex Pistols reunions. He had a nature show called, like, I don't know what it was called, John Lydon's Bugs or something like that. Where it was like he wandered around and talked about insects, like he was like the Steve Irwin of insects. And then this one episode, he goes into this like old lady's disgusting roach filled house, and I'm sure it's on YouTube. It's really spectacular in that like it's John Lydon wandering around being horrified by
roaches. But why was it roach filled? Was it because she wasn't cleaning? Was she collecting roaches? I mean, was she like crazy roach lady or?
I don't recall. It was probably a combination of like hoarder, depressing poverty, and you know, crazy roach lady. I don't really know how one becomes this, but yeah, I mean, it was one of the the only thing that she should have done was just burn the house to the ground because it was gross. But anyways, yeah, I'm sure that's on YouTube or something. But anyways, yeah. So see, I tied that right back into punk. Look at that. Let's talk about punk. The Muffs are streaming their new album, Whoop-de-doo. It's their first in 10 years. It's due out on July 29th. You can find the link to it over at Pitchfork is where it lives. This is the first thing that they've had out since 2004's Really, Really Happy. So this is a Burger and Cherry Red Records release. Their last one, 94, I don't even know who released that one. Hard to say. They were on a major label for a little while. I don't know if that was part of that. 2004 seems a little late for that. But anyways, yeah, so this is the first from Kim Shattuck and the Muffs since a decade ago. You guys give this a listen?
Yeah, man. I was not a huge Muffs. I just was not that aware of the Muffs. I mean, I knew of them, but I never really knew a whole lot about them. I checked this out. I got to say, I was really surprised about how great this is. I really, really like this album. What I particularly like about Kim Shattuck is she's got like a sweet-ish voice, but sometimes she gets nasty and mean and kind of vicious, but not all the time, so she goes back and forth. I think the actual music is pretty good. It's kind of like, I don't know, neo-grunge or neo-alt-rock or neo-alt-punk. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was clever, tight, compact, and I think this is a winner, man. I really enjoyed this. And honestly, the punk news listeners probably know, she got booted from the Pixies about a year ago now for, quote, like having too much fun or being too energetic on stage. Comparing this to the last Pixies album, Kim Shattuck and the Muffs win by a mile. This is a cool release. I'm down with it. I recommend it.
I agree. I was into the Muffs back when they first started. And I just looked it up on the internet right now. They were on Warner Brothers with that first release that they did in 94. And, you know, they were out during that whole alternative rock explosion that was happening in the early 90s. And I was really into them back then. And what you just said right there, John, when you talked about how she goes from very sweet to kind of vicious and nasty, that was really one of the appeals of the Muffs that I really liked. And I was listening to the stream just a little while ago before we started recording, and I'm into it. I'm surprisingly into it. I was kind of worried about, you hear a band that's, you know, so far on down the road and they kind of lose it for whatever reason. And it just sounds like something they would have done however long ago. I'm really into it. And I'm excited to hear the rest of the record. I've only listened about half of it so far, but the fourth song, Take a Me, I think it's called, was really cool. I really dug that a lot. So yeah, like you, I'm totally into hearing this.
I feel like this is a band that, you know, when they were around, I mean, punk news was around when they were around and still active, but I don't feel like they're a band that we talked about a whole lot, but it feels like there's a lot of love at this point. And I don't know if it's like a nostalgia thing or if we've heard, you know, maybe when they were around, you know, there were people into the Muffs, but they were never like a band that we talked about all that much. But now, you know, they still represent a sound, I think, that a lot of us are big fans of and don't get to hear that much these days.
Yeah, and don't forget that Kim Shattuck is on Liza and Louise with NoFX.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, I think, Adam, it's sort of nostalgia. I think people want Kim Shattuck to win because I think the Pixies – I think everyone agrees the Pixies treated her pretty poorly. And I think it is nostalgia because more and more in punk rock, in all rock, in indie music, ever – rock and roll, I've talked about this before, rock and roll is kind of dying out. There's not a whole lot of rock bands left. The Muffs are clearly a rock and roll band, not even necessarily a punk band, a rock and roll band. And I think people still like rock and roll, and there's not a whole lot of rock and roll band. Everything, you know, a lot of stuff right now is post-punk or emo or, you know, or kind of like not hooky. There's not a lot of hooks in it. The Muffs kind of are founded on hooks, and people are looking for that energetic snap. And I think that's kind of why people are digging this record. So good for the Muffs. I'm glad.
Yeah, so this looks really cool. So let's hop over to the next thing. I don't know if this is going to get the same amount of love. I don't think it will. So anyways, Weezer have premiered the first song, their first new song in 5 years. It is the track titled Back in the Shack. I kind of said that like Christopher Walken. That was weird. Anyways, it'll appear on their upcoming full length, which is called Everything Will Be All Right in the End, which is due out on September 30th, 2014, via the Universal Music Group, everyone's favorite boutique record label. We've heard this before. This was a song that they played on their, I can't believe I'm saying this, on their cruise ship thing. And there was video of it that, that was posted back whenever that happened earlier in the year. So people have heard this live, at least. So this is the official studio recording of Back to the Shack. I'll hold my opinion on this and then let you guys go, and then I'll come in at the end here. What do you think?
Go ahead, Mark.
I was going to go for you, John. I really don't have much of a feeling for it. I mean, I like some of the lyrics about it. I kind of like the way he was looking back on rocking back in 94, and maybe Pat should play guitar, or Pat should play drums, I think it was. I don't know. It's kind of a forgettable song, and I think Weezer is kind of – they're recording records and going on tour, and that's great they're going on tour, but I think it's kind of like recording something as a reason to go out on tour, you know what I mean? It's kind of trying to avoid being on a nostalgia trip.
I'm actually going to take a opinion of – seems contrarian, but I'm really not trying to be contrarian. Is if you read the comments on this song, people hated this. People really, really, really hated this. I come from kind of a different perspective. I was never that into Weezer to begin with. I've listened to the Blue Album probably 10 times. I've listened to Pinkerton 10 times. Just not a huge fan. And so when people were talking about how terrible this was, I thought it was going to be like the worst thing ever. I listened to this sounded like a normal Weezer song. I didn't think it was that bad at all. I thought maybe it was a little boring. I think maybe it went twice as long as it needed to go.
I agree.
I didn't think the refrain was that inspired, but, you know, I mean, I didn't think it was terrible. And I think, you know, sometimes Weezer goes for the so lame that it's good again, you know, like the sweater song. Not that the song is lame, but the refrain about a sweater, that's an uninspired refrain, but it's so boring it comes back, becomes interesting again. I kind of think they were going for that. I didn't think that this was that bad. And I don't know if Back to the Shack is a statement of saying, okay, fans, we're finally giving you what you want, another Blue Album type album, because that's what Weezer fans have been crying for ever since the Blue Album came out, really. And so, and Weezer seems to like want to deny that. The problem with Weezer is it seems that they're too goofy, but not only are they goofy, they don't put any effort into their goofiness. If you put effort into goofiness, it comes out really, really well. Look at Frank Zappa. Look at Chrome. Look at the Melvins. Any band like that does that, it comes out well. But Weezer, they come up with, like, you know, just this wacky idea, and they don't really put any real thought into it, and they just do it, and it comes out as kind of limp. I think that's why people kind of have a grudge against Weezer. I didn't think this song was that bad, and I thought actually there was a little bit more effort in here than we've heard from Weezer in the past. I don't think there was a ton of effort in this band. I think they found a riff that they liked and a refrain that they kind of liked, and it worked. I thought the song was okay. I don't think it's tarnishing Weezer's legacy, and frankly, I think it's better than a lot of Weezer stuff we've seen in the past.
Before Adam jumps in, because I know you want to say something, I've never been a huge Weezer fan either, and I really just kind of started discovering them or rediscovering them over the last couple of years. But honestly, this song just strikes me as being lazy. It just sounds like more of the same old, and... And I appreciate what you say about, you know, being goofy and having put some work in that goofiness and stuff like that. But they just seem like this nerdy rock band that just never really never floated it for me as much as so many other big, big fans are, like some people I can think on the site. Hi, Greg, if you're listening. But yeah, just a lazy song, I felt.
Well, actually, that goes to my point, really, is you said that it's what'd you say? You said same old, same old. That's what you said.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. in a way, like the Weezer fans have been saying, we want same old, same old. And Weezer's been like, well, we want to do wacky stuff. And that's kind of the crux of the problem is they never really go in for either way. If they put effort into the wacky stuff, their wacky stuff could be great. And frankly, I wonder if their laziness, if it is laziness, kind of ruined the band. If they kept doing wacky, interesting things, I think they really could have built a fan base. But instead, I guess they're kind of trapped by this first album. So now they're trying to do that first album again. But they'll never be able to do that because they're older, they're in a different headspace. And really, when people say we want the Blue Album again, they really want exactly the Blue Album again. But you can't do that because if you make exactly the Blue Album again, it's boring. But if it's not exactly the Blue Album again, then it's something different. So they're kind of trapped. And I think really the only way out is to really put more effort in, you know.
I think what kills this for me is I don't want to say it's just the production, but it's the production. It's really like the way that the band's playing it. I think that like on paper, the song is fine for a Weezer song. What I want to compare this to is compare this to a song like The Good Life, which was one of the singles off of Pinkerton. That's a song where they were playing their hearts out on it. They were, you know, there was a little bit of, I don't want to oversell this here, but you know, there was a roughness to it. It seemed like it was done in less takes. There was less polish. It wasn't a hardcore song or anything, but there was a little bit of shouting and exuberance in it. And I think that, you know, like lazy is really what I get from this song. Mm. Because when Weezer was, and I think they've embraced really the wrong parts of what they were. Weezer was always sort of like a nerdy band, but they were nerdy, but they very earnestly tried to play, you know, big fun rock songs. And that was what kind of made it charming. Now it just seems like, you know, they're in on their own joke. So when you're, and then that combined with the lyrics in this song just make the whole thing completely hollow to me. You can't sing about, you know, basically going back to the garage and being like you were when you were a youth, if you're going to do it so limply and so like the chorus in here is so sing-songy and safe. And it, like, imagine that being played at like, you know, like a half step faster and with like a little bit of fire in it. And they could have had something where it was like really fun and propulsive that really sold the, you know, we're going back to basics. We're going back to having a lot of fun. But that's not what they do here. It's just kind of a plodding along thing, and like the sentiment is fine, but they're not selling it.
Adam, you know, you said that Weezer's thing is that they were nerdy and weren't in on it. I kind of feel that the nerdiness angle of Weezer has always been overstated. I almost like it's that thing now where like people that aren't nerds say they're nerds to like get a sort of authenticity or coolness factor, like a reverse coolness factor. I never really felt that Weezer was that nerdy. I always felt that it was kind of a put on, not that they're like, you know, Motley Crue, like cool guys or whatever.
Well, no, I think that we have to qualify nerdy. We're talking like 1994 nerdy, so we're talking about just guys that are not cool and that are probably you know, that are not rock stars, that are not into, you know, that have those kind of geeky interests. I'm not talking about this stupid self-referential kitschy Big Bang Theory style of nerdy that's really in vogue right now. I'm thinking more like the sweater song kind of nerdy.
But even that, when I think of nerd in the 90s, I think of a guy that knows how to make his own modem. Do you think the Weezer guys like knew how to make their own modems, or were they just not the coolest kids in high school? I kind of think they were normal kids that weren't super cool, and they overplayed the nerdiness. Like I don't think the Weezer guys were getting beat up and put in lockers.
No, I think it's probably more that they didn't embody the, I guess, like the dangerousness or the image of the kind of guys that you expect to be in a rock band.
I guess the irony is now, like, the general, well, like, you know, in the 90s, who did we have in the 90s? New metal was starting to become a thing. So you had all these guys with, like, terrible haircuts and those terrible beards being like, I'm going to beat you up, you know? And then you had, like, gangster rap, like, I'm going to shoot you, you know? And then you had, like, country western, you know, I'm going to bite you up. Weezer was none of those guys. They weren't, you know, they weren't like,
I'm going to bite you up.
I don't know. I don't know what I said. Listen, I'm on a rant. Weezer wasn't like let's go out and here's what they were getting with the nerdy. Weezer was not a band that was like let's go out and drink and have sex with chicks. You know, Motley Crue, the band, had just gone out of vogue, so Weezer is sort of a reaction to that. Quite ironically, almost every of the modern punk rock bands the kids are into these days embody that Weezer facade. But here's my problem with it. I think it's all a big I think it's sort of all phony. I would say that the guys in Weezer, and if not then, the people that have adopted the Weezer je ne sais quoi, are doing all the wild things that guys like Motley Crue and did, maybe on a less scale because they don't have as much money, but they're not really these nerdy guys that don't want to drink and party and do all these wild things that is suggested by the music.
We're going to get so much complaining that we're talking about Weezer.
Well, listen, people want to know our – and actually, Adam, we got an email about this exact subject. Should we read this email?
Yeah, go right ahead.
You can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. And actually, if you remember last week – or actually maybe it was 2 weeks ago, we kind of got on the hate train on Gaslight Anthem. We really gave it pretty hard at Gaslight Anthem, which I don't necessarily feel bad about, but I mean – no one really stuck up for Gaslight Anthem. So we got an email from a reader who actually reached out to me on Twitter, and he's like, listen, you guys were too hard on Gaslight Anthem. Why are you going to talk about Gaslight Anthem if you're going to talk about how much you don't like them? And I said, well, send me an email. I'll read it on the podcast. So here's his response. This is from Bobby. Bobby says, I really appreciate you giving my letter some discussion. Thanks for telling me to write in and say you check it out. Here it goes. I feel like you guys are in the habit of including topics on the show that maybe you shouldn't be including. I'm not saying that everyone needs to like the Gaslight Anthem. Herd mentality is far from punk. And you certainly could make a case that their new stuff certainly doesn't hold a candle to their old stuff. But it just bumps me out when I listen to this podcast and it's such a stunted discussion. My overall point is this. Most people in my life don't know who bands like Gaslight Anthem, Against Me, Alkaline Trio, Banner Pilot, Larry Arms are. So when I listen to this podcast, I'm kind of hoping for and expecting some more nuanced opinions. And again, this is the Punk News Podcast. And again, this is the Punk News Podcast. I didn't listen to the song. Oh, he's saying, and then when here's what he's trying to say. He's saying, when I turn into the Punk News Podcast, I don't like Gaslight Anthem. I didn't listen to the song. Like, if that's the case, why even bring it up? It almost feels like unintentional trolling of your audience by the podcast participants. It'd be like if it was a hardcore basketball fan, I turned on ESPN for the highlights of a particular game, and instead the anchors are like, I didn't watch the game. I don't even like basketball. It's like, dudes, that was supposed to be the one place where I could get Gaslight discussion, you know? I feel like there should be a slightly higher amount of responsibility on your end. If that's asking too much, fair enough. I don't mean to overreact to the Gaslight Anthem thing from last week, as it didn't particularly irk me or anything, but I do think it's symptomatic of a bigger issue. You cover a niche genre of music, but it seems like there's either a dislike or apathy to a lot of the bands in such a relatively small scene. And that's signed by Bobby.
Good job.
Mm.
Well,
I agree with the sentiment that Bobby's expressing. I don't agree necessarily that it applies to the Gaslight Anthem, I guess.
Well, let me put it this way. I give Bobby a great amount of credit for sticking up for his opinions and contacting us directly. And I encourage more of that. As always, you can reach the podcast at punknews.org. We love to hear your letters. As to Bobby's point, I have to disagree with Bobby a little bit. And I actually asked Bobby to write in his defense of Gaslight Anthem, so I'm hoping he'll do that. But people ask us our opinions. I get emails or Facebook messages, John, what's your opinion of Gaslight Anthem? John, what's your opinion of Alkaline Trio? So people want to hear the Punk News Podcast opinion. And I guess just on that one recording, our opinion was we weren't really that down with it. But that's not to say that the Punk News Podcast we can't just give all positive recommendations, because if we did that, what's the point of listening? It seems as though we're not being genuine. So we have to be, you know, I have to be honest with the listeners. But as I always say, I'm definitely open to having my mind changed. If you remember, we were hammering emo pretty bad a little while ago, and then some guy wrote in a defensive emo, and I kind of took it back because I realized I was hammering emo too much. If the listeners remember the Mighty Transplant Wars, they raged. We attacked the transplants, and Mark, not this Mark, but another Mark, fought back, and I think he gained some ground for the transplants. So I think we can't just talk about stuff we like. We have to give our honest opinions on the topics we like and the topics the kids care about in order to stay relevant and interesting and trustworthy. So that's just my opinion.
Well, let me say, Bobby, I like the Gaslight Anthem. I'm a fan. And actually, I found out about Gaslight through punknews.org way back in the day. I think it was, you know, what is it, 06 or 07 when Sink or Swim came out. And Gaslight has a really special meaning for me. I mean, I've got some really good memories with that band. I'm kind of curious what happened on the site where suddenly that band was so loved and just so fawned over for a period of time. And then there was just suddenly it clicked and then people just seemed to turn on that band. And I'm wondering what exactly it was that made people flip over so quickly.
Oh, man.
Go for it, Adam.
Two black-legged ticks found in the Niagara region tested positive for Lyme bacteria. God damn it.
That's heavy duty.
And that is why people turned against Gaslight Anthem.
This is exactly what I was talking about. Fucking ticks, man. I don't even want to live here anymore. But Gaslight Anthem, yeah. I mean, on the one hand, I don't feel that we were overly harsh, but I mean, maybe we were. I mean, every band is someone's favorite band, and I guess, you know, blasé apathy expressed towards your favorite band is just as hurtful as criticism, and I get that. And I totally get that it would be super nice if this was a safe haven for all the fans of punk to come and hang out. But in the end, we're three assholes on a podcast, and if we decided that we didn't like the Gaslight Anthem, then that's cool. I'm not gonna, you know, if that's everyone's opinion, then that's everyone's opinion. I don't think that, you know, just because of the caliber of band or whatever, that they're necessarily owed a deeper look or a deeper amount of thought to go into it. I mean, we should be informed, but this is, you know, this is rock music. If a song doesn't grab you, a song doesn't grab you. And I'm not going to take a song that doesn't grab me and come up with a incredibly deep opinion as to why. I'm going to ignore it and go to a song that will. And I don't know if that's a cop-out or not, but that's the way that my attention span works. So that's where I'm going with that.
Yeah, I'm hoping Bobby writes back and says why the Gaslight Anthem's new stuff is meaningful to him. And I'll read it. I'm always open to that.
So. Which is valid. I don't want to invalidate that. Like,
yeah, yeah.
It, like if you like this stuff, if you're into it, that's awesome. So that's great. I you know what? Hell, have them on the show. I'd like someone to come on here and talk about that. I don't want to like create this like this the Gaslight Anthem hate zone or anything like that. I think if anything, you know, we don't begrudge the band. We're just not into this stuff. I guess. But ticks, man. I am so unhappy with this. So Billy Joe Armstrong has recorded a song with Avicii?
Avicii. But he's actually Avicii. Sweet or something. He's not
I don't even know who that is.
You don't know who Avicii is?
I have no idea.
Adam, I'm not trying to be a dick here, but Avicii is probably the world's most famous DJ, and he's probably one of the world's five, maybe world's top, highest grossing record live artists. Do you know how much he gets when he plays a DJ show? Guess.
How much does he get when he plays
guess.
A DJ
Adam,
show?
Adam, guess.
Guess? Yeah. Like $1 million?
Not that much, but.
Oh, well then, what the hell?
he gets like $350,000 for like a DJ set. He's like super
Oh, Jesus.
Rich. This guy's this huge, and he's only 24. I'm honestly jealous. I wish I had gotten into like EDM, and I just cast these checks.
This is why we're poor. Okay, so anyways, an article in Rolling Stone has stated that Billy Joe of Green Day has recorded a new song with the superstar DJ that Adam now knows the name of, named Avicii.
Avicii.
So the song is titled No Pleasing a Woman. And it will be out on Avicii's next full length. The disc will also include collaborations with John Bon Jovi, Serge Tankian. Let's go Tankian. Yeah. Of System of a Down. Chris Martin, who I think is the Coldplay guy. Wyclef Jean and Mattis someone Yahoo. Else I don't know.
You
Who's know, the other person?
You know Mattis Yahoo?
Mattis Yahoo?
He was the Hasidic Jewish guy that was a rapper and reggae guy, but now he's no longer Hasidic Jew, but he still raps and does reggae.
Cool. Okay. Anyways, this is coming out. I don't think you can hear this yet. Green Day, of course, released Demolicious this year, which was the record store day exclusive pile of demos from their Uno Dos Tres albums that they released the year before that. Are you guys looking forward to this?
No, but I'll tell you, this is actually endemic of modern music. Avicii is gigantic. I think the only other there's one other guy that's like as big as Avicii. I forget his name, but he's much older. He's like 40 or something. Avicii is unquestionably one of the biggest, hugest producer / DJs in the world. When he puts out a single, he sells a million copies of a digital single. That's because, you know, in the EDM world and that kind, and all across the globe, EDM and singles are very, very popular. Even though albums don't sell. Avicii's first album that he put out didn't sell hardly at all. It did terrible. So this is him trying to, I guess, beef up album sales with these artists that really are past their prime. I mean, you know, Jon Bon Jovi, is he really that? Is he that relevant? Wyclef Jean, he's cool, but I mean, when's the last time Wyclef Jean put out anything interesting, really? So this is either one of two things. It's either Avicii trying to break into the rock world with these artists, or he's trying to do a Rick Rubin, Johnny Cash thing where he's going to reinvent these artists. I think it's really more of the former. And honestly, I kind of think it's a – I think this is a poor plan forged and headed by the record label. I think the record label would be like, Avicii, we need you getting in the mainstream. We need to get you on rock radio. What they don't realize is he's selling way more in the EDM, and he's way more popular in the EDM. I mean, rock radio is not that popular, especially compared to urban, especially compared to even country. So I think the label heads, because, you know, rock music still does get a lot of coverage, Rolling Stone, Spin, Pitchfork, they're like, Avicii, we need to get you into the rock market. I think that's why they're doing this, but I think this is going to bomb, and I think Avicii will just go back to being, you know, an EDM DJ that you don't really see a whole lot in non-EDM publications, but it's gigantic in the EDM world. So the point is this, is the album isn't that relevant of a format anymore. Well, I love their album, I should point out, but people don't buy albums anymore, so I think this is the label trying to get people to buy albums through this collaboration, but I don't think it's going to work.
That's a weird smattering of artists to try to target. I mean, Jon Bon Jovi, Billy Joe of Green Day, and Wyclef Jean. Like, you're trying to, so like, we want like old people, young people, and like people into urban music we want all of those markets to jump on board with this. So it's like, who are we missing? I get like you get Yo-Yo Ma on there. You get some classical folks in. If it is a strategic thing where they're trying to target, I don't know, a different market than they normally performs in, it's such a, I mean, diverse, but not in a very interesting way, group of artists who they've got on there.
Feels kind of like a focus group, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's like some intern down the hall, they were like, hey, go get me a list of all the various non-DJ superstars. We'll get them all on here. Like Madonna? Can Madonna be on there? You can get the... Who listens to Madonna? Old ladies?
No, old ladies, man.
But Madonna's into that stuff, though. I mean, Madonna.
Oh, yeah, she is into that stuff. Shit. Okay,
dude,
who else?
Women,
I mean, down here.
Madonna is quite impressive. Girls age 14 to 60 listen to Madonna. You got to give Madonna props for staying relatively relevant.
All right, I don't want to derail here. Okay, who else? Should be on this? Right, I mean, so it's one of those. It's weird. It seems calculated. I mean, yeah, it does. Avicii.
Yeah, down here, that stuff, I mean, that kind of music is huge down here in South Florida. And there's the Ultra Music Festival, which is like the big EDM 3-day festival that goes on in downtown Miami. And, you know, tens of thousands of kids show up for that. They spend $600 to $700 for a 3-day pass to get in. And Avicii was supposed to play this year, as a matter of fact. And he got sick, I think, the day before for whatever reason, wink, nudge, and wasn't able to perform. But seeing this, it just... I can't imagine anything about this that is appealing to anybody. And I can't even imagine that any of these people have known about Avicii or him of them at any time. So like John is saying, I can only see a record label or a manager or something behind this trying to put people together to make a buck.
Well, Avicii, what do you know? So should we play a song? You guys want to keep going?
Oh, yeah.
What do you think?
We can play a song. I got a tune, actually. This is, you know how usually if you see a new band that you like when you first see them, you're like, oh, that's kind of cool. And you go check them out online after the show or whatever, like an opening band, you check them out online after the show. And you're like, wow, this band's kind of cool. And you keep listening to them and you become a big fan. I saw this band called Bad Canoes. It's fronted by Marissa Paternoster of Screaming Females. I saw this band at a house show in Philadelphia. From the minute I saw this band, I was like, oh my God, this band is fantastic. I was blown away by how awesome this band was live the minute I saw them. It's not like the thing where you see them live, you're like, that's kind of cool, you check them out and you become a fan. I was a huge fan from their very first song. This band is phenomenal. I don't want to talk them up too much after that, but their live show is fantastic. They've got Marissa Paternoster, they've got a bassist, a keyboard player, and a drummer. And it's kind of like a mix between the Screamers and the Slits. Like, she does like the bird call thing that like Ari Up would do. But meanwhile, she's rolling around on the ground, jumping up, you know, punching people, kicking people. It's a wild live show, and it's far out there, man. I love this band. They've got a demo tape out so far. If you can see this band live, go see them live. Highly recommend it. This is off their first album called Bad Canoes, or their EP called Bad Canoes, and the track is called Daria's Boots.
We're back. That was Daria's Boots.
By
Bad Canoes.
Yeah, man, I tell you, like the recording is cool, but it does not do them justice live. It was one of the craziest, most berserk live shows you've ever seen. If you ever seen like Ari Up or the guy from Tomatsu Do Plenty from Screamers Live, same vein, like just out there all over. I love this.
How long ago did you see them?
3 weeks or 2 weeks. It was awesome, man. It was awesome. And I'm seeing them again in a week and a half. And then again, 3 weeks after that.
All right, cool. That was good. So let's move on here. So Toy Guitar has signed to Fat Records. The band has entered the Jingletown recording studio in Oakland to begin working on their debut LP with Chris Duggan, acting as producer. Now, this is the band that is fronted by Jack Dalrymple of One Man Army and Swingin' Utters fame. I guess One Man Army would really his main gig. And Toy Guitar features... Hold on, I had the list here. Here it is. Jack was also in Dead to Me, of course. So at least the version of Toy Guitar that was on their EP that came out on Adeline earlier this year, and I assume it's the same lineup, was Jack along with One Man Army member Brandon Pollock, Swinging Utters bassist Miles Peck, and Danielle, female name, Agnew. So they released an EP on Adeline earlier this year that was kind of garagey, I think more than some of the street punky stuff that Jack's dabbled in the past. So anyways, you guys excited about this? What do you think?
I've only heard one song by them. I checked them out on YouTube and saw, God, I forget what the song was. I think it was the last single that they did. It was on Adeline, as a matter of fact. And I don't know, I kind of liked it. It didn't grab me like I thought it would have, because I really like Jack's voice. I really like the way he's got his melodies going. But I'm into checking it out. But it's not something that grabbed me immediately like I thought it would have, to be honest.
This is cool. This group, anything Jack does is huge in the Bay Area. He's kind of like a It's the interesting Bay Area effect. In the Bay Area, like, everyone thinks, like, these acts in the Bay Area are the biggest groups in the world, and you go outside of it, and no one really cares about them. But this is cool. I'm excited to check out more. And no, that's really a whole lot you can say about it. I mean, it's kind of what you expect. Of course, they're going to sign the Fat. And, you know, he's kind of like one of these, I guess, underground legends that'll probably never really get his due, that people always say he's great, just won't catch on, which is a shame. But this is a cool recording, so, yeah.
I have two thoughts here, and one of them is completely inane. I kind of like the garage rock vibes that they're doing, at least on the songs that I've heard. It fits kind of my interests and the kind of stuff that I've been listening to lately. So it'll be cool to actually. When are you scratching a scratch ticket?
No, I'm scribbling on a piece of paper.
Did you win?
I won my scribble. Yes.
Fantastic. And I guess so that's cool. I like the idea of hearing Jack in the context of being in more of a garage rock band. I think that'll be neat. It infuriates me that this is one of these bands that has their own form of punctuation that they've come up with.
Oh.
I don't care who's in the band or how good they are. Like fuck you for not just giving your band a name, but enforcing some sort of weird, what is they're doing in this case? Like the word toy is in lowercase, and then there's like a camel case G, and it's one word. Ah,
what's a camel case mean?
Camel case is a programming word. Like you like join two words together, and they're all lowercase, but you capitalize the individual words so you can see where the break between the words are.
I think we would just call that a capital G.
What?
Oh, never mind.
Ghosts?
But fire hose.
Fire hose?
Yeah, fire hose okay, did the same kind of thing.
I don't care. Fire hose, that's fire hose nice.
Is awesome.
They can spell it however they want, or they can, I guess, capitalize it however they want. I cannot think of a band that has benefited from this. It makes writing about them a pain in the ass. It makes, like, cataloging them a pain in the ass.
Do you think subconsciously, like, writers will ignore this band or be less inclined to write about this band just because it's so annoying to write their name out?
I will spell their name according to the rules of the Queen's English just out of spite.
Take that, Jack Dalrymple.
Yeah. Me and the Queen don't care. So anyways, okay. So this is coming out on Fat at some point. We don't know when. The first teaser trailer has been posted for the upcoming sequel to the film SLC Punk that began shooting earlier this summer. Titled The Punk's Dead, SLC Punk 2, the film does not follow Matthew Lillard's character from the original, but catches up with other characters from the original. So you can find the link to YouTube on Punk News, where you can go take a look at this. Now, this sequel was funded on the crowdfunding site Indiegogo. It has, as of me looking at the page right now, raised $87,771 of a $60,000 goal to make this thing. Threw in money could, you know, end up in the crowd in the film and stuff like that. So anyways, if you guys, I don't know, do you want the plot? Does anyone remember this movie when it was out? So 18 years later in Punk's Dead, Bob is still dead, but Trish from the Bong Shop, Steve-O and Sean the Beggar, John the Mod and Crazy Mark and Tree Hugger Mike are arrogantly saving the world for another generation. Or they're at least trying. Get ready to find out what happened to your favorite characters as we take you to the pivotal events in their lives since SLC Punk. Holding it all together will be the misadventures and observations of one of their offspring, an eccentric kid named Ross, the spawn of Heroin Bob, who has a lot to live up to. So, I guess... Okay. Thoughts on SLC Punk, and then thoughts on this trailer.
Well, let me just say for the record that I never saw SLC Punk, so I have no idea what the sequel would be like. But I did watch the trailer, and I would think John would be all about this if only because the dwarves are in there.
Actually, the dwarves are not in this.
Isn't that the dwarves in the trailer?
It's the He Who Cannot Be Named solo band.
That looked like Blag.
I'm pretty sure it's the He Who Cannot Be Named solo band.
Hmm. I stand corrected.
But, you know, people are like, this looks stupid, this looks bad. I don't know, man. This looks like, you know, one of those fun bubblegum punk movies. You know, it's like people are hoping for an authentic punk rock experience. I mean, it's not going to happen. I mean, it's not like that happened in Rock and Roll High School, perhaps the greatest punk fiction movie of all time. But I think this is going to be fun, man. I think it's going to be a wacky, wild thing. And, you know, it's not going to be, you know, it's not going to be Taxi Driver. It's not going to be Godfather Part 2. But it'll be a fun film. I'll check it out. I'm not expecting anything more from this than, you know, a little bit of silliness and maybe some references to punk rock. I kind of think where SLC Punk was operating off what was happening at the time, this seems to be a little bit more nostalgic to me. This seems to be trying to recreate the 90s punk rock scene, which you see a lot. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I don't think it's recreating the modern punk rock scene. I kind of think it's creating a time when punk rock was kind of like associated with the mall, if you will, or punk rock was associated with, I guess, having a good time with your – well, that's a dumb phrase. You know, when punk rock was not necessarily as removed from the mainstream as it is right now, even though it knowingly, I guess, disapproved of some of the things in the mainstream. I think it'll be fun. What else can I say?
I have this the original movie on DVD somewhere, but I can't say I've watched it in the past 10 years. I don't think it's one of those things that aged – at least it didn't age very well in my head. I remember two things about the original movie. One is that my friend of mine had the soundtrack to it, and it had Sex and Violence by The Exploited on it, which I always think is the most funny song ever, because I think that those are the lyrics. It's just like, sex and violence, sex and violence. That's great. And the other thing was that movie infuriated me because during some scene where they were doing like a flashback to, I don't know, some 80s punk house. They were playing a Suicide Machine song that was recorded in like 2000 and whatever in the background.
That's annoying.
And it was super annoying. And I know that's a totally nitpicky thing, but you're making a movie about punk rock that is like has all these period piece elements to it. Don't have the party music in a scene that is set in the past be a song from the future.
I you know how like people will watch movies and like look for loopholes to make themselves feel smarter? I do that with like the 70s show. In the 70s show, it would always piss me off because they would have the 80s AC/DC logo even though Bon Scott hadn't died yet, and that always really annoyed me. So I feel your pain, Adam. I feel your pain.
Thank you. Someone should.
And by the way, I'm looking at the website for the movie, and it looks like they filmed a concert for the movie like a few weeks ago, and it was Screeching Weasel and the Dwarves and Dog Party.
Oh, maybe the Dwarves are in it then. There you go. I guess I'm wrong.
I got to say, I was not super enthralled by the trailer to this. But I don't necessarily think that's a comment on the filmmaking because I don't know. There's a part of me that is resistant to this thing existing, and I don't know why.
Really? Do you feel as though it's manipulating your childhood memories?
I don't know. I feel that there's a part of me that when I was a young whelp thought that movie was really fun, and then there's a part of me that as I grew older was like, God, that was stupid. I can't believe I liked that thing. And I just, you know, left it in the past, and now I have to deal with it again, and I'm resistant. None of the things that I think are actually rational, but that's where my brain went.
You're strange, slow, and old, Adam.
I know. Speaking of which, sick of it all. They are planning a new nice record. Although they're not really slow. So anyway, Sick of It All have announced details for their upcoming album. It is their first since 2010's Based on a True Story. It's their first chunk of original material in 4 years, at least. A year after that, in 2011, they had released I forget the name of it, that collection where they went and they re-recorded a bunch of stuff from their early days. But anyways, so the first new Sick of It All material in 4 years. The record is titled The Last Act of Defiance. It's due out on September 30th on Century Media, I believe. Century Media, there we go. It's been produced by the band's longtime friend and producer, Tue Madsen, who recorded the album at the Nova Studio in Staten Island, New York, and is mixing it right now at his Ant Farm studio back home in Denmark. So there are 14 songs on this sucker. The cover art's pretty cool. So yeah, Sick of It All stuff is coming out. This is a band that a lot of people like, and I feel that doesn't get a whole ton of punk news crowd respect.
Well, actually, you know, I was surprised at how reactive the punk news crowd was. This, if you look on our, like, it's interesting. It's always interesting for me to compare the comments to the Facebook comments, and sometimes they're wildly different. This article was huge on Facebook, and people love this band. People love seeing this band. People love talking about this band. And so, you know, it's just going to be another Sick of It All album. People enjoy it. I'm not anti-Sick of It at all. They're not one of my favorite New York hardcore bands, but, you know, I wish them well. I don't have anything against them. However, I will always enjoy the following fact. And now you listeners and Adam and Mark, you will be privy to the secret information. As people know, KRS-One opens the very first Sick of It All album. And actually, on the re-recording album, he opens that as well. On Will.i.am's album from 2003, Will.i.am's solo album, there's a KRS-One track on it where he opens it. And one of his lines is, "Before rock met rap, I was sick of it all." I guarantee you, not a single person listening to that album got that reference, except for me. And now all you are privy to that as well. So there you go.
John Gentile, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
I like Sick of It All. I mean, I like them in a way that, like, they're not a band that I, like, actively pursued and listened to or anything like that, outside of a few records. I think they're a band that, you know, if you're not super into them, there's probably a certain level of sameness about their sound that, you know, if you're not like a New York hardcore person, you know you don't necessarily need to keep going back to the well on it. But, you know, there's a few songs that from Sick of It All that I really like. I think the video for Potential for a Fall is one of the funniest videos for some reason, which I think was on the album on Fat that they put out. But I'm looking forward to hearing this. I haven't heard anything new from them in a long time, so I wish them well. I like that they can maintain the New York hardcore dignity that Madball has shed, and no one gives, at least amongst our people.
You know what you're going to get with a Sick of It All record. I can't say that I dislike them. I'm not a huge, huge fan, but I'm not against them, like you guys were saying. I've seen them a few times down here. They always put on a good show. You always know what you're going to get when you see them. So it's going to be cool to check it out. I really admire their longevity. I've got to say that. They've really stuck to what they do, and they've never wavered.
Cool. All right. Well, let's I think we're hopping over to our last story. I believe we are. Am I missing one? This is super interesting for everyone to find out. Well, we'll just make this the last one. Matt Skiba.
No, we got to talk about sleep. I got to talk about sleep.
Oh, yes. Sleep. I closed the tab that had the sleep story in it. Hold on, John. We'll get sleep going for you here.
I was looking for this all week, baby. I've been looking forward to this for, let's see, 4+18 years, Adam. 18 years.
And I took it away from you almost. So, Stoner Metal Titans Sleep have released their first studio recording since 1996's Jerusalem, which was later edited and released as Dope Smoker. The new song is a 10-minute epic, and it is called The Clarity. The song was released as part of the Adult Swim single series. After NPR asked the band if the song was a lyrical follow-up to Dope Smoker, the band turned around and described the song as a lyrical follow-up to a lifetime of marijuana enjoyment. So there is no word yet if we're going to have more stuff from them. On recent tours, the band has been playing songs which have never been recorded, so presumably they have songs that could end up on a new record, but no word on that yet. So, Sleep, The Clarity, John.
Well, I'm a Sleep maniac, I gotta say. I love Sleep. They're by far the best stoner metal band, if you don't include Black Sabbath, which I don't, and if you don't include the Melvins, which I don't. As the listeners might know, Sleep is a very, very important band because they've got three albums so far. The first album is kind of almost more death metalish. The second album is called Holy Mountain, and it's like the classic stoner metal album. But there's a lot of stoner metal bands out there, and I guess what's kind of annoying about a lot of stoner metal bands is, you know, they do like the 7-8 minute riff, heavy, slow song, but they all kind of blend together. What's interesting about Sleep is, to me, they're much more unique than their contemporaries. As we said, in 1996/2003, they put out Dope Smoker, which is a phenomenal album. Dope Smoker is a 61-minute, or maybe it's even 71 minutes. It's a 71-minute song. It's not like it has multiple parts. It's just a 71-minute song. But what's phenomenal about that is it's so huge, so heavy, and so slow, but it never gets boring. It's enthralling throughout. So I love Sleep. They're incredibly daring. They're incredibly interesting. After Sleep broke up originally, they factioned into two bands, basically. One band is with Matt Pike, and that's High on Fire, which is more of a thrash metal band. And the other band is Ohm with Al Cisneros, the bass player. And that's more of a drone band, although not drone like Earth, kind of more like, I guess, stoner metal drone, really far out stuff. The question is, where can they go from there? Because they've got three albums that are all radically different. The first is almost like death metal. The second is classic stoner metal. The third, gigantic, you know, hour-long song. Where can they go from there? The clarity nails it. I love this song. It's 10 minutes long, but it's not just a, as on, like songs on Holy Mountain, it's not that they don't just find a riff and then do it for 10 minutes. It's got multiple parts. It's got a badass riff. But they also kind of merge together the newer parts of their newer bands. It's got some of the energy and the attack of High on Fire, but also kind of has that transcendental, you know, zen-like moments on Ohm, where Al Cisneros just kind of gets into his own field and you're kind of on a new plane. I love this. I think it's great. I think this is the way to do it for a single. I'm not necessarily hoping for a new album because Sleep has three great albums as it is. If they came out with a fourth and it was just, you know, a stoner metal album, it'd be disappointing. If they're able to make an album with tunes like this that are hard, heavy, and far out, then I'd be down. But I'd really only want another Sleep album if it was great. If it was only mediocre, I'd rather just have singles. That way, I don't know, so it doesn't – I don't want to say tainted legacy, but that way, so Sleep has just a bulletproof discography. But I dug this, man.
Yeah, I like this song a lot. I listened to it a couple times this evening, and it just really killed me. And I was surprised at how long it was, also because it flew by. It doesn't feel like it's a 10-minute song or just over 9 minutes. It goes up and down. It just feels like it takes you on a ride. I really, really enjoyed this. And speaking of High on Fire, Matt Pike playing with High on Fire, they're going to be on the Motorboat Cruise, which is going out in Miami in a couple months with Motorhead and Anthrax and a bunch of thrash bands. So,
well, that's our Sleep star. I don't really have anything to add to this. I'm such a Sleep novice that I can't match John's.
Adam, let me give you an intro chorus and the listeners by proxy. There's three Sleep albums. The first is called Volume 1. The second is called Holy Mountain. The third is Dope Smoker. Unless, you know how sometimes when you first get into a band, you don't know how to listen to them? People will say, you got to hear Dope Smoker. It's their best work. It is their best work, but it's not the place to start because it's so massive and it's such an undertaking. Get Holy Mountain. It's about 7 or 8 songs, you know, 6 or 7 minutes long. Just awesome stoner metal, badass riffs. Great vocals, just powerful music. Check that out. If you dig that, you'll love Dope Smoker. So check out Holy Mountain, then go from there.
Cool.
Or actually, right. You know what, though? Check out the single. This is a free online single. This is actually a pretty good representation of all the different things Sleep does. So check out the single. What can I say?
That's exactly what I was going to say, is that the clarity is really a great way for new listeners to be able to get into this band, because it's definitely a band worth checking out.
All right, then. I will check this out as soon as we're done the show here. So now for something completely different. Matt Skiba and Mark Hoppus are recording a kids' music release. So Skiba, of course, of the Alkaline Trio, Hoppus, of course, of Blink 182. Skiba, he appeared on the Darren Rose radio show, and while he was there, he stated that this project was in the works. The project is called The Serial Killers, as in the breakfast, and one of the songs is titled I Want to Be a Spider, which is about a young boy who wants to be a spider.
Get out of here.
Yeah, it's what it says on the package. So there's no projected release date for any of this, or no one knows where it's going to come out or anything like that yet, but there you go. kids music from Matt and Mark. We haven't heard any of this. I mean, even if we did, I'm pretty sure it's not recorded with us in mind, so it doesn't need us to be critical of it, I suppose.
But Adam, you're a dad. Would you want to play this for your kids?
I mean, we could see.
Or is this kind of thing? Because, I mean, you see that they have, like, you know, lullaby versions of certain bands that have come out now over the last few years, and like with something, you know, like this,
I would be far more likely to play this than the lullaby versions of something, which I feel that we're almost past the lullaby phase. I don't know when kids grow out of that. We never really did it with our daughter, but I definitely didn't want to be, I don't know, there's something that feels so stupid about, you know, I'm going to play you lullaby versions of Ramones songs to put you to sleep. Like, no. When you get into the Ramones, you can get into the Ramones. I don't want to play you something that you're not even going to notice, but like it satisfies my need to be a hipster dad to do it for you. Like, no, you can listen to Raffy or whatever the hell kids music there is. And that's fine. So I don't know, the lullaby versions of real punk songs and stuff like that, I don't know, to me that's dumb. However, if this is more along the lines of, say, like the kids' music that like Mike Park put out, then that's really cool. I mean, that it's original stuff. It's written for kids. It's written by people that are like legit songwriters. And I don't know, that's kind of fun. I'm cool with that. I mean, there is still, I suppose, that element of hipsterism to it, in that the people that, you know, this isn't going to be bought because objectively it's great kids music. It'll probably be bought because the parents are Alkaline Trio or Blink fans, you know, like it's there's something cynical where like it's a sales tactic to help sell this thing to parents more than it's, we're going to make some great kids music. So I don't know, there's a part of that that kind of bugs me, but there's a part of it me that's saying, if I got to choose between this,
Adam,
and,
you know, you touched on this briefly. And that I don't have a kid, you do, but I'm of the opinion, and maybe I'm wrong, it's like there's no need for kids music. You can play adult music for kids. You're not going to play like Cannibal Corpse for your kid, but why not Queen? Why not Stevie Wonder? Why not, you know, Jamaican ska? Why not just play that for your kid, which I think is probably intellectually more stimulating and more positive for a kid than a song about why you should look both ways before you cross the street. I don't know if those songs have any real positive effect. Do you disagree?
See, this is a fascinating discussion. This will be followed up in a post on the Dad's Not Punk blog that we don't update. but yeah, I mean that's a really good question. And on the one hand, I kind of want the kid to know how to cross the street. On the other hand, can we convey that to them without having to listen to a super irritating song about it? Then in that case, I'd rather listen to not that. But that is a great question. I don't know yet. My daughter is like 19 months old, so we're not at that phase where we're using music to teach her social norms yet. So we'll see.
So you're still at the point where you're using verbal abuse to teach her social norms.
Yeah, just mostly like shouting and, you know, no, don't go by the street. Yeah, that kind of thing. You don't need to play that on a guitar. You just shout and then run.
Adam,
kids don't listen to you at this age anyways.
Adam,
to just do whatever they want.
Are you enjoying being a pops? Do you see yourself as a pops?
A pops?
Yeah, a pops.
A pops.
Like, will your daughter call you pops?
I don't think anyone calls anyone pops.
I call my dad pops.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm going to assume this is an American thing.
Maybe it
is.
No.
I mean, if she does, I guess I'm okay with that. But I've never heard anyone in real life that isn't on TV call anyone pops.
Really? How about daddy-o?
I don't know if I'm that hip. Clearly I'm not. So anyways,
how about just dad?
Dad? Okay, so should I play a song? Do you want to play a song? What do you want to do?
Play, Adam. What do you got?
All right, I'm going to play a song here. This is a band out of Toronto called Champion Lover. They just released a full length, and they had the release show for it a week ago or something like that in Toronto, and they're great. A local blog around here that I really like called Quick Before It Melts turned me onto them. The band has kind of like a sonic youthy thing going on, but not, but like more of like a punky end of it. So there's a little bit of Wire, there's a little bit of Pixies, there's a little bit of, I don't want to say there's a little bit of Joy Division, maybe there's a little bit of Joy Division. Anyways, though, it's an interesting kind of mix of like 80s stuff and punk rock. It's fun. I like it a lot. It's totally something that I need to sit down and spend more time with because I just heard about these guys today, but we're going to play a song by them. So this is Champion Lover. The song I'm going to play is called Read My Mind. So here you go. This is Champion Lover out of Toronto. Read My Mind. Here it is. And we're back and we're done. That's it. We're done. We're finished. There is right. No more podcast.
Finished. Finish it.
Why are you all still here?
The whole time that song was cool. The whole time we were listening to that song, I couldn't help but think of Shabba Ranks's Mr. Loverman, even though that song was Champion Lover. Because Shabba Ranks is the champion something, and he's got the song Mr. Loverman. So
Shabba!
FYI, Adam.
The mind works in mysterious ways. Okay, if anyone wants to email us, it is podcast@punknews.org. That is all. We'll see you guys next week.
Laters.
Later.